You know, some people enjoy composing their own music, chord by chord, and others are happiest when they come across that one perfect song. Work is not a lot different than that. Whether you prefer building your own workflow or using a pre-made template, with Monday.com, you and the team can work in a way that's comfortable for everyone. Tap the banner to go to Monday.com and build your own amazing workflow, or find an awesome template. No judgment.
Well, I don't see the point in waiting any longer, so let's bring her out. The star attraction, the one you came to see. Ladies and gentlemen, the one, the only, Ms. Judy Gold.
Welcome to Kill Me Now. Let me just say, I'm excited and nervous about this interview because I don't want to say the wrong thing. But this guy, I love our guest today. He is a journalist. He is an author. He is a civilist. He is Mr. Manners. No, I'm not. I'm wrong.
No, I was finger wagging at you. Like, you be worried.
Yes, I'm worried. He is brilliant. He is funny. He's one of a kind. I mean, I think you are it for our generation as far as what you do. And he's a proud member of the LGBTQRSTUVWXYZ umlaut, pi sign, cosine, treble clef.
And may I add one other identifier?
Wait, let me think what the other identifier is. Author, journalist, TED talker.
My mother was a Jew.
Oh my God! I was wondering through your reading. I thought so. God damn it, shit.
Her name was Strauss.
Wow. That is, oh my God. Stephen, I thought I wasn't going to be doing the bell that much. But now.
I'm so excited that you went and got the bell because you almost forgot it. I've been looking forward to this for weeks. I don't often have the opportunity to come out, you know. I'm a terrible Jew. We had
right, obviously. I mean,
I am cut, but that's about it.
I have two Jewish friends actually who have not circumcised their children. And it really bothers me. And I know it's none of my business, but I feel like it's one of the rites of passage, the identifiers.
Yes.
And it really bothers me, even though it's none of my business, but I'm a little judgy when it comes to that. And I'm going to be brutally honest with you today because you are brutally honest. Now,
I'm going to be brutally honest with you too.
Good.
Curiosity is usually not a good reason to go invading someone's private parts.
Right. But I don't want to know about it either. Like, don't tell me what your kid's penis looks like. This book, by the way, is... I'm cursing. I don't care. I can't be someone else with you. It's fucking great. Stupid Things I Won't Do When I Get Old. But you have 8,000 other books. But this is the new one. And it's fuck. Please read this. Please. Okay.
Thank you. You can totally curse with me.
Okay. Stephen, your life is fascinating. And we have a lot of things in common. Okay. Number one, we have a very high, what would I say? High society person on the show today. Okay. I'm just saying.
Where is he?
And he who has a Jewish mother, which makes him Jewish because that's what Hitler would say. Okay. So you're best known for your New York Times essays, Washington Post essays on civility, manners, aging, cancer. You wrote The Complete Gay and Lesbian Manners and The Definitive Guide to LGBT Life. You have a civil behavior column in the New York Times, the host and executive producer of the Civilist podcast. You are fascinating to me because even though I'm like, I curse, you know, and people think I'm harsh. Mm-hmm. I come from the same sort of background as you, as far as, and I want to get into this later because I want to talk about your childhood, but I am.
Should I lie down and make you?
Yes. Lay down. Is it lie down? Lie down.
Lie down. Dr. Judy.
Okay. And my friends will tell you this, Stephen. I literally get violently angry with bad table manners. I can't, there are certain friends I can't even look at when they eat with the thing like that, you know, like hold. I grew up in a house. I know this is going to shock everyone. My mother, Jewish, my grandmother was born in 1896.
So was mine.
No. Oh my God. It's getting, we're the same person. Okay. My grandmother was born in 1896. My mother, 22, my father, 1916. Okay.
Wait, your father was born in 1960?
16. Oh. Anyway, it was a big thing at our table growing up. Like my grandmother, they grew up in a house where you had to ask to speak, you know, like, may I mm-hmm. speak? You know, this is they're older. I had older parents, but so it's generations of, but I was brought up with this. Never use a pusher. We weren't allowed to use a pusher to get something on our fork. I mean, my mother would sit there for a half an hour to try to get the last piece of rice onto her fork without using a pusher.
She might have starved to death. It's so
right.
difficult.
And you know, the way you hold your fork, like if I see my kids, I'm like, and it's like my mother used to be, what are you going to do when you have dinner with Queen Elizabeth? You know?
She's not Jewish.
What? Who's not Jewish?
Your mother.
My mother did love the royal family, but.
You know, my favorite one was, Judy, and this came up last weekend. I was at a small dinner party. We had, it was basically borscht, but it was fancy beet soup the way.
Right.
And everybody was kind of like just chugging. I said, you know, remember the rule with the spoon out to sea and back to me.
Right.
No slurping allowed.
No slurping. Also, it is true that if your soup is cold and you get it first, you have to wait. When the food is cold, don't you wait for everyone to be served?
Unless your host or hostess says, please go ahead without me like my mother used to.
Because they're modas. They're mod. Please go ahead and eat without me. No, you eat.
Starve to death.
Yes. But it, you know, I'm as reading your book and just know it, like, Stephen, I get like mad. Like, I don't know. Like I'm trying to work on this because all my friends make fun of me all the time. They don't push their chairs in. They, you know, and they're like, what is wrong with you? And I don't know what psychologically it's really has. What is that?
You know, our moms get in our DNA and, you know, no matter how much I've tried, I still pee in the same pod with my mom.
I know.
She got me stationery that matched hers when I was.
I read that. And I have stationery. I just went over to someone's house for dinner and I wrote them a thank you note. I always handwrite thank you notes. It's a thing I always do. And people call me, I couldn't believe it. There's no way I could A, go to someone's house empty handed or B, not write a thank you note for having me to your home.
Well, please come to dinner.
Oh. And you love my stationery. Mine's cranes as well. Okay, so Stephen.
I will be writing a thank you note when we're done.
Oh, I've gotten a couple of those. Yeah. Erica Rhodes wrote me a thank you note. Because I think we discussed that. And Rob Sedgwick. You know, like I get.
So I know folks at home can't see this, but you can see this. I got this thank you note from a 19-year-old friend of mine this week.
No.
It's so beautiful. You know, she really booked both sides of the card and even on the back. And so sweet. Elise Moses. Love you.
Jewish?
Not Jewish.
Not Jewish. So you must have had a good time. You must have had a good time with Elise, huh? If I didn't know any better, Stephen. So listen, you grew up in NYC, correct?
Correct.
So that I'm really jealous of. My mother was from the Upper West Side.
But so was mine, again.
Same.
What year was your mother born? West 90th Street. She was born in 1932.
So my mother was born in 1922, West 94th Street. Now, my aunt is 1920. Did she go to Joan of Arc?
She went to Hunter for high school. I don't know where she went.
No, I'm before. Yeah. And then they went to Julia Richmond for high school.
Okay. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Guess who was in my mother's class?
1922.
Famous actress. Mm. Changed her name.
Jewish?
Jewish and changed her name. I can give you the original name, which will probably give it away.
Give me the original name.
Betty Persky.
Oh. Oh. I'm drawing a blank, but I know.
Lauren Bacall!
Exactly. I'm smoking.
Wow, you are so ungay. You lost one gay point for that.
You know, I'm not good on that.
Okay, that's fine.
I had my gay revoked.
So you grew up in New York City. Your mother, Margot. Your father, Richard, also known as Dick.
Not a Jew.
Not a Jew, but a professor and a journalist. Your mother was a psychiatric social worker.
This is true.
Correct?
This is true.
Father, professional professor of journalism at NYU.
Mm-hmm.
Two siblings, Julie and Jay.
Yes.
And where did you go to grammar school? I was searching for a grammar school in high school and I could not find anything that really pissed me off.
Well, I went to PS 101 in Forest Hills, Queens.
Yes, and you had your grandmother lived in Queens, correct? Yeah.
And then I went to Stuyvesant in Manhattan.
Well, of course you did, because you're a genius. Woo! Did your siblings?
I really wanted to be a meteorologist when I was
growing up. No way!
And Stuyvesant's a science and math school. I got a much higher score on the math part of the SATs than the verbal. And I don't know what happened. I became a writer.
So Stuyvesant, by the way, now is the most competitive, probably the most competitive high school in America. But also, it's crazy. Like, it's crazy genius. It's probably harder to get into than when you were, like every college is now. But
yeah.
Did your siblings also go to Stuyvesant?
My brother did.
Jay. Where did Julie go?
Julie went first to Hillcrest High School.
Mm-hmm.
And then she went to McBurney in Manhattan.
Oh, yeah. That's nice.
She got the private school. You know, the baby and the family were always jealous of her.
Oh, well, you know, I'm the baby and we are perfect. So what was your childhood like? I mean, like, you're a New York City kid. First, you're gay. You have this, you know, these great parents who were so educated. What was it like growing up in New York City at that time?
Well, so we grew up in Forest Hills and right off Queens Boulevard.
Right.
And like within a block, there was a gay bar.
No way. What was the name of it?
A Touch of Class.
Ah! They always have the worst name. Whispers. Yeah, go ahead.
No. And so I would go there. My sister would go there. You know, we didn't even have to drive because
they're
like younger than 18. And so the most memorable event there was I went home with this guy. And then, of course, after we had done the deed, he asked me my name.
Right.
I told him. And he said, are you related to Julie?
Right.
I said, why are you asking? And he said, you're a better kisser than she is.
No fucking way.
And Julie will really appreciate me telling that story, I know.
That is hilarious. What year was that?
That was in the 70s, the mid-70s.
That's fucking hilarious. So
then we were in cahoots with each other. We would go into the village together. We would go to tell our parents we're going out. And then we would go to our respective bars, do our respective business, and then meet at 4 a.m. at West 4th Street and take the UDF back home.
Right where the Comedy Cellar is. That's so funny. So you kind of had a pal in this whole.
Yes.
So were you involved in like extracurricular activities? Like, I love reading about your relationship with your father, which we'll get into. And that you were really close to your mother. Mm-hmm. Were your other siblings closer to your father than you? It's just so fascinating to me that, you know, you talk about this fraught relationship with your dad, and yet you end up having the same profession as him, you know?
And there was a time in my life where I wanted to do everything different than my dad.
Right.
I was that know-it-all, which is sort of part of this book.
Right.
And in so many ways, I am following in my dad's footsteps and have been for a long time. And so that's a real you know, that's a challenge. And
right.
Especially, you know, when we get to talking about what it means to be older, because I saw right. my dad say he would never do the same things that his mother did.
Right.
Fiercely independent and would not leave her house. And then he was the same way. And here I've written about the importance of, like, you know, making accommodations and so
right.
on. Am I just going to be exactly like them? Is it? It's scary.
Well, I hear myself with my kids all the time. Like, oh my God, that was my mother. Like, it's,
I know.
It's, but yeah, you talk about your, you know, having to tell your grandmother that, sorry, you got to move to the ground floor. And she's like, you know,
she's no,
go fuck yourself. Yeah.
Hey everyone. I love our sponsor, Fast Growing Trees. I don't know if you've noticed when we show the clips of the podcast that I have a new best friend in my office named Avi. And where did I get Avi? At Fast Growing Trees. Fast Growing Trees is the biggest online nursery in the United States with more than 10,000 different kinds of plants and over 2 million happy customers in the United States of America. And I am a happy customer. I love walking in this room and seeing my fig tree, Avi. I talk to Avi. I love it. It makes me happy. And you need plant life in your house. And I have another plant on my piano in the other room. I'm just telling you, it makes your home so much more of a home. So thank you to Fast Growing Trees. They have everything you could possibly want. They have fruit trees, they have palm trees, they have evergreens, they have houseplants, and so much more. And I'm in an apartment in New York, okay? I don't even have a yard outside. And it's changed my life. Do it. Go to Fast Growing Trees. And whatever you're interested in, they have it. They have the perfect fit for your climate, for your space. You can call them and ask them how to take care of your plants. They have so much information. And it's so easy to order online. Your plants are shipped directly to your door in 1 to 2 days. They have a 30-day Alive and Thrive guarantee. They have free plant consultation forever. Forever. And I have a new best friend, Avi. I love you, Avi. So do it. You don't need a yard. You don't need a lot of space. You just need to make your home a beautiful place. And that's where Fast Growing Trees comes in. This spring, Fast Growing Trees has the best deals online, up to half off on select plants and other deals. And listeners to our show get an additional 15% off their first purchase when using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's an additional 15% off at fastgrowingtrees.com using the code JUDYGOLD at checkout. fastgrowingtrees.com, code JUDYGOLD. Offer is valid for a limited time. Terms and conditions may apply. Do it. You're welcome.
What extracurricular activities were you involved in?
I was on the swim team at Stuyvesant.
Wow, hot. Yeah.
I got my letter.
Uh-huh.
We would practice at the Salvation Army on 14th Street because that was the old Stuyvesant building. There was no
right.
pool.
Right.
And so every meet was an away meet. Usually we were mugged. We lost.
Any action in the locker room?
In my mind, there was a lot.
Right. Was it really hard being a gay in that sport? Like, I know gays in so many other sports, but that sport in particular must be, because it really is, you're naked, basically, you're hugging, you're like, you know, was it really hard for you?
You know,
and pun intended.
I know what you meant. I know what you meant. Remember, I'm cut. Yeah. It was hard. It was really because I was still closeted and had not
right.
come to terms with who I was. So it was hard because of the secret.
Right.
And, you know, and the attraction.
Right.
On Facebook, I see how everyone's grown up. I don't know what I was thinking.
Right. I know. Isn't that funny?
I would not want to see anybody in a Speedo.
I know. I look at some pictures sometimes on Facebook. I mean, that's the only good thing about Facebook is you can be like, wonder what happened to that asshole who was so mean to me. And then you're like,
Yeah.
Such satisfaction. And you were really close with your siblings, or just your Julie, or not Jay as much?
You know, we've been close our whole lives. We've sort of had different waves and alliances. So
yeah,
my brother is straight. Although when both Julie and I came out to him,
right.
he was like, Well, maybe I'm gay too. And we were like, no, you like girls. We hear you with your girls all the time. You're straight. But they each have kids. And that was certainly a bonding aspect between them.
Right.
They have two each.
Yeah.
But I will say, like, when our parents got sick, we became a very high functioning team and got much deeper.
That's what happened to us too, even though, you know, my brother was in Arizona. This is like, you know, it's me and my sister and I'm the youngest, and my sister lived closest, and she really did the brunt of the has to be done right now, you know, kind of stuff.
As did mine.
Right. And so I did a lot of her advocating, taking her to doctors, you know, stuff like that. And my brother, this is so, my brother, talk about firstborn Jewish male. Mm-hmm. Would come to visit my mother, right? And he would go to the nursing home, the Hebrew home, which she insisted on being in, and it had to be kosher. So that's why she was there. And he would go, he would get here like Friday morning or late Thursday night and sit there until Sunday night with her. Like, and he called it total immersion, total immersion. And my mother would sit there. What son does that? He is, who else would do? I'm like, Ma, I'm here every other week, every week. I could, you know, I talk to you 80 times a day. I call.
And you're a girl. You're a girl.
Right. He comes in every, and he just sits here. He's so, and I'm like, I can't take it anymore. But it's also, you know what, Stephen, I have this theory about the available gay child as well. I think that in a lot of families, the child who is gay, who has internalized homophobia and wants to make up for the disappointment, they usually end up caring for the parents. Don't you think?
I think that's a lot of the case. I mean, in my family, my sister was closest. And so she was hands-on. My brother was in Connecticut and I was down here in North Carolina. So I got charged with like doing all the finances.
Right.
That's a job you could do remotely. And who knew that we learned how to be remote 4 years ago.
Right.
Then I would go up and then I would play my, you know, firstborn card, especially with my mom.
Right.
And she'd be all over me. And
oh, you know, Stephen, I love all my kids, but Stephen is something, favorite. Huh?
You would tell me I was her favorite.
No way. That's so funny because Julie and Jay are here today. Julie, Jay. Okay, so
Judy, I tell them that all the time. That would not
I'm sure they know. Every kid knows who when did you and your sister come out to each other?
You want me to be honest?
Yeah. I want you to lie, yes.
Well, she would want me to lie. So I was 21 and she was that would make her about 16.
Right.
And we're in her bedroom in Forest Hills. And I kind of like stammer. I'm gay.
You know? Right. It's like an out-of-body experience. For kids who don't have to do this, and have been holding for a secret for 21 friggin' years, it is like, I can't explain it. Go.
I practically had a heart attack, and then she just starts laughing hysterically out of control. And I'm thinking, too soon, she can't even deal with it. Like, she's having a mental health disorder is coming on.
Right.
So finally she calms down. She's able to talk and she says, I'm a lesbian.
Just like that.
And then just like that, like she had no issues.
Right.
I like freak out. What? You're a lesbian? And I'm not going to say exactly what I said.
Right.
But it reminds me of the t-shirt my mother gave her for Christmas around there. We open our presents. It's the kind of Jews we were.
Right.
It says Muff Diver. My mom had no idea what that really meant.
Oh my God, that's hilarious.
Muff Diver.
Okay. Were you a little jealous that she was 16 and be able to say it?
Yes.
I mean, I would have been like...
And she was having, you know, sex.
She was diddling. I know. I diddled at that age.
I was not 16. You know, I waited to 18.
Right. That's crazy. And then it was your secret with her, correct?
Well, it was for about 3 weeks.
Right.
Then my mother, she must have gotten wind. She gotten wind of it. And so she started by badgering my brother and she broke him and he outed us.
Wait, how did he find out? You told her and then both of you told him?
I guess. I don't remember. She must have told him, but.
And she didn't care, your mother.
Mel did, and she broke him.
Wow. Did she care?
Yes and no. So, yeah. I mean, to be honest, like, it turned out that my mother's mother, Marjorie Strauss, was also a lesbian.
Oh, Stephen, this is friggin' amazing.
And she was partnered with Esther Bean, B-I-E-N, who was head of the American Girl Scout magazine.
No way.
They lived on the Upper East Side my whole life. They were like these two proper...
Esther was Jewy. Yes.
And I think Esther was Jewy.
Esther's so Jewy, that name. But yeah, go ahead.
So she edited the American Girl magazine. And I have some of those copies here.
Oh, my God, that's amazing.
It was so subversive. So the article that I loved best was 7 Ways to Groom Your Pussy.
No. What year was this?
Probably like 1959.
No fucking way.
And the pictures were all of kitties and cats, but that was...
Oh, that's hilarious.
Yeah. And so that was in my mother's baggage. And then it turned out that my mom's sister was a lesbian. So my mom felt really...
It is so genetic. But yeah. So your grandmother, Marjorie, was married to...
Arthur Strauss.
And what happened?
He died young. He died young.
She's so lucky he died young.
Maybe she killed him.
Yeah, that's... And how many kids did they have?
They had 2. Margot and Anne.
Wow. And
you're getting me to say things I have never said.
I know. I love that. So Margot and Anne's not Leslie.
No, Anne was Leslie later in life.
Oh, right. So
she's deceased. Well, they're all deceased.
Bye, Anne. I love you. So did Anne ever marry a guy?
Yes.
Or did she live a Leslie life?
She married George. And they had
not
two,
Jewish.
Not Yes, Jewish. George Youngwood.
Nice. Okay. They had kids.
They had 2 kids.
Any gays in that family?
No.
But you think one of them might be. I can tell by your face.
I don't think so. No. You know, no.
Okay.
Other secrets there, but not that.
Okay. So, and this is such a lesson for any young LGBTQ+ people. The history of us, of being gay in that time period, the fact that people had to live another life and couldn't be true to who they were is such our story. And I think that people need to know the history of these people. I mean, you wouldn't be here if Marjorie hadn't.
Yeah.
But it really is the history of being LGBT and holding on to the secret that is just so painful. Living like being in the closet was one of the most painful things ever. And then you have to just say, this is who I really am. And, you know, it's horrible. So I love that you're sharing this with me. Also, when you were a kid, when Marjorie and Esther moved in, what year was that? And did your mother ever shield you like, oh, they're just roommates or anything like that? Or did you always know?
So my mother did not acknowledge it for a long, long time.
Right.
I think my grandfather died in 1962. And I think they moved in together like a few years after that. But they had gone every year to travel to Europe for like 3 or 4 months. And so they had this one bedroom and they had twin beds.
Oh, right. Cool. Yeah.
It was like... the Dick Van Dyke Show.
Or Ricky and Lucy, yeah.
And you know, it was always Grandma and Esther, and we had 3 grandmothers, essentially. And then they died, you know, within a year of each other. It was a really beautiful love affair, but it wasn't spoken of. And then me, I guess I smell it, because I would always ask Esther, how come you never married? How come you never married?
Right.
It's like I had this repetitive disorder. And it was a terrible question for me to be asking her.
Right. But she probably knew that you knew, or she, I'm sure, don't you think she knew you were gay?
Absolutely.
Right.
I mean, so my grandmother was a milliner. She had a 5th Avenue hat shop. Nobody in our family ever wore hats.
Right.
All I wanted to do was try on the hats. And then, you know, at Christmas, again, the non-Jew Christmas, you know, I remember I had gotten Lily Pulitzer slacks. And I was like, you know,
wow.
It's been flamingo. And it's like,
right.
What's going on with this guy? Yeah, they knew. We didn't talk about it.
So I just find it fascinating that the Judaism was sort of a side thing. And yeah. This other, you know, these identities that carried, I guess, shame. I just, it's so sad, you know? But I'm so glad that they had each other for that period. Were they traveling while she was married to Arthur?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Wow. So he probably knew.
Well, I don't know, because they went off to do the hat buying in Europe, you know, and then they would come back to the TWA terminal in their fur coat. And all I wanted, you know, all I wanted then was their fur coats also.
And
millions of hat boxes. So I don't know what.
Hey everyone, you know what I just did? I tore, I poured, and I enjoyed a packet of Liquid IV. Because I love Liquid IV. Liquid IV is a major part of my life. And I just worked out with my trainer, and I had a delicious lemon ginger Liquid IV. That one has a little extra. That has a little green tea in it, and so that's a little caffeinated. So I enjoy that because I needed it today. And, you know, it's getting warmer out, and what does that mean? Summer. Oh, God, please come. It can't come soon enough. And that means you have to hydrate. And that's what Liquid IV does. It hydrates you with benefits like electrolytes, vitamins, and clinically tested nutrients. And it has 3 times the electrolytes of the leading sports drink, plus 8 vitamins and nutrients in one little stick. And that's why Liquid IV is the number one powered hydration brand in America. Okay? And I love it. I use it every day. Ben's basketball team uses it. It is a science-backed formula that works. It keeps you hydrated. And they have sugar-free. They have sugar-free packets in white peach, green grape, raspberry melon, and lemon lime. Okay? I didn't do the sugar-free. Okay. But Elisa does the sugar-free. So what are you going to do? You're going to stay hydrated because it's very, very important. And Liquid IV has been a longtime sponsor, and I love them. And they are a quality product. And this is what you're going to do. You're going to turn your turn your ordinary water into extraordinary hydration with Liquid IV. Get 20% off your first order of Liquid IV when you go to liquidiv.com and use code JUDYGOLD at checkout. That's JUDYGOLD. That's 20% off your first order when you shop Better Hydration today using promo code JUDYGOLD, JUDYGOLD, can't even say my name, at liquidiv.com. Got it? You're welcome.
You then go to UC Berkeley, right? Do you go to Duke first?
Go to Duke for undergraduate.
Duke first. Yeah. And then UC Berkeley. You graduated magna cum laude from Duke because you're a Jew. My mother loved anytime we saw a person who was like obviously so dumb or was acting really dumb, my mother would be like, Phi Beta Kappa. Okay, so, and you got your master's at UCal Berkeley, and you're in your early 20s and you get cancer. You get testicular cancer. And then when you're 26, they find some lymph nodes in your abdomen, was it? Or?
I was diagnosed with testicular cancer in 1984.
Right.
I was with my boyfriend Joshua then, and he was touching me down there, and he goes, "What's that?"
Joshua who?
Joshua Reimer.
Jew. Okay, go ahead.
Absolutely.
So he's touching your testicles,
and he goes, "What's that?" And I'm like, "What's what?" And there was like something. So of course, I paid no attention.
Right, no attention.
Yeah, and then I went, and it was a whole thing, and it was a tumor, and I got it. I got chemo. You know, one of the best stories I will, you know, this is like the story though, that defines my mom. So I had this operation that took one of my testicles. They gave me a prosthesis. I can't believe I'm going on about this.
And I love it.
And when I was in with the nurse, back then they would let you choose which size you wanted.
Right.
So guess what? I chose, I want extra large, right? She goes, no. You're a medium. And
I love that.
We got into it. She won, actually, but that's fine.
All right. So aren't you happy with the medium?
I'm not a size queen.
All right. There you go.
Yeah.
We're in
with the oncologist and my little public service announcement. And he says, you know, you're fine. We got everything. And then he says to my mom, I've never lost a patient. And my mom, you know, Upper West Side, she goes, you're an oncologist. What do you mean you've never lost a patient? I'm taking my son for a second opinion to Memorial Sloan Kettering tomorrow. And there, they found I had metastatic disease. And I will call out Dr. Harry Herr, H-E-R-R, who was my savior, and said to me, either you believe me and you live, or you believe that other guy, then you're a goner. But that story.
Wow. Good for your mother.
Mom, and the importance of second opinions.
I have two questions on this. How it affected you, because, you know, life is a series of befores and afters where you're a different person after something happens. So dealing with that, and then also as a son, watching his mother, like, were you cognizant of the pain that your mother was feeling through this and the loss of control?
I don't think I was fully aware of it at the time because I was making this transition from being a jerky, self-centered, eldest Jewish son to a patient who was scared, still self-absorbed, and then, you know, coming out quite a bit different.
But
it was terrible for both my parents, but especially my mom, because she was much more that way. And then 2 years later, I had a thing on my leg, and I was afraid to get the HIV test. This was 1986. They'd had the HIV test for about a year at that point. So I went to my doctor, who was gay, and he said, well, we'll take that off. And then they sent it to the lab in Oakland, and they called my doctor and they said, is he gay? And my doctor said, yes. So they gave me a diagnosis of Kaposi sarcoma, which was the AIDS diagnosis.
Right.
There was no treatment then.
Right.
I went to a couple of other doctors and they said, just go home, get used to it. You know, that was awful. That's when I would go into the supermarket instead of buying, you know, the big mayonnaise, I would get the 4 ounce mayonnaise.
Right.
But I wound up seeing Dr. Marcus Conant in San Francisco, who was the leading HIV AIDS doctor at the time. And he said, you know, let's back up. You never had a blood test. Let's do this the right way. And it turned out to be nothing, a nothing burger.
Are you fucking kidding me? I mean, the fear of that. I mean, I lived through that as well. I lost a lot of people, which is another thing that young gays need to learn about, this plague. I mean, I can't imagine cancer and thinking you have AIDS. I mean, did you tell your parents about the Kaposi sarcoma?
I did. My first book was called Dancing Against the Darkness. And so while I was in that month, I made this vow to whatever higher power existed that if I got a break, I would try to give back.
Right.
I got a break, and the first book I did was I followed 6 people who had been diagnosed, as it turned out, through the time they became sick to when they died. But I did tell my parents. We had a conference call. You know, this was like when we'd never had a conference call.
Right, right.
And it was probably the most painful call of my life.
Of your life.
Yeah. And then, you know, then I heard my mother, get a second opinion. And so, yeah, but it was hard. It was hard for us. And it probably, yeah, it made me understand just how brief life might be.
Right.
And it took me a long time to even imagine that I might have anything near a full life expectancy.
Right. At this point, you've been cancer free for so long. Do you still go like, oh my God, lump? Are you still constantly like worried?
It's kind of a PTSD that I have because when I started the book tour, I was having some problems with my throat. And I thought, of course, I have throat cancer.
Right.
And I will say, to help sort of bolster my neurosis, my sister has had cancer, my mother right. had cancer.
Your sister had ovarian and your mother had lung.
Right. And my sister-in-law had a sort of a throat. So I go to the ENT finally, and he says, oh, you're fine. You know, you need some physical therapy for it. But I just like broke down in tears. Like,
right.
All the way back through all that trauma. And I just had to recognize that's what it was.
Right.
And, you know, that's okay. You know.
Did you get a second opinion?
No, I like that news.
Ah, that's so great. But
and
yeah.
maybe I should, Judy.
No. I always wonder that, you know, but it must have made you a completely different person. You started writing books, and there's so many things. This book in particular is so personal. It, you know, when I started reading it, I was like, oh, stupid things I won't do when I get old. Like, oh, he's making fun. You know, like the title does not do the book, you know, it is humorous and it is, but it's so brutally honest and it's so heartfelt. And as someone who had older parents and grew up always around old people, I found it fascinating. And your mother, you talk about, first of all, your father having an issue with you being gay. You know, here's my son, and there's something missing in our relationship because I can't understand his sexual orientation. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
No. Which I find that it is usually the same sex parent that has a bigger problem with a gay child, or had a bigger problem when, you know, during this time period, because they can't imagine being gay, but an opposite sex parent who is heterosexual can imagine wanting to be with a woman or wanting yeah. to, right?
Yes. Yes.
Do you think that's?
I think that's a very good theory, Dr. Judy.
I could be on tour with you.
Yeah, no, it's very true. And it was definitely an issue between my father and me for a long time. And one that we weren't able to bridge.
Right.
I mean, in terms of, you know, form, yes, he was always very embracing of my sister's family and wife and my partners. But I think, you know, deep down, there were issues.
Yeah. And especially being the firstborn, it's like, you know, you're my...
Right. Yeah. And I'm the one who doesn't have kids.
Right. Good move. Okay. So I'm kidding. I love my kids, Henry and Ben. I love you so much. Added so much to my life.
I love my nieces and nephew.
Right. I bet you do. Okay. So, I mean, you did get married. You got married. You wrote about that. You've written about that. You've also written about getting divorced,
mm-hmm.
which was when marriage equality passed. I think you got married in 2013. Is that right?
We got married in 2013.
Okay. So when marriage equality passed, which I tell people all the time, you know, people did not go, you know, it was the biggest, the largest amount of wedding marriage certificates given in New York City that day.
Yes.
And yet people did not go to church. They did not go to synagogue. They went to City Hall because it was about our rights as human beings living with dignity and being treated like everyone else, which gets, you know, this idea of religion gets caught in this. I don't know if you heard Jen Paskey was asked that question about, did you see this? Jen Paskey. Oh my God. I fucking love her. I mean, she was asked a question about, you know, President Biden talking about this Texas anti-abortion thing and how can he be against it when he's a Catholic? And she basically was like, I know you've never been pregnant and you can never deal with this, but this is our body, or, you know, and it was such a great answer. And I feel like the same thing is with gay marriage, you know. It's not about religion. It's about dignity and respect.
It's about being recognized by civil society.
Right.
No, I know others have said this, but it was really eye-opening to me because Jim and I had been partnered for many, many years at that
point. And you hate the word partner, as do I.
You know, we were lovers, we were whatever. Yeah. And, you know, we got married and I lived in this town here, Hillsborough, North Carolina, yeah. 6,000 people. And it was just amazing how much more recognition our relationship was given once we were husbands. And we had this wedding reception here.
Right.
I think 75 people came. It was the first time we gave toasts. It was, they say every LGBT person is sort of an ambassador for this cause.
Right.
I remember that afternoon. We were ambassadors. People were paying attention. And I said, well, and what it really means is I can have sex with Jim 24/7.
Right.
It's not exactly true because.
Right.
Anyway, I'm not the comedian here like you.
Right. But it is true. Did your relationship change? I mean, obviously it changed and you got divorced, but did it change immediately after that celebration? Or did
No.
I mean, you didn't feel more.
I didn't feel more connected. I didn't feel like our relationship changed. I felt the way people perceived our relationship
right.
changed. And that
I keep telling that to Elisa, who keeps putting off getting married. I love how you've written about using the word husbands and wives rather than partner. Mm-hmm. And the way you explain it, which if you could just do a little quickie on that, because I love that.
Well, so when we got married, my mother, by this point, was great on all these issues. But
right.
she was, well, who's the husband and who's the wife?
Right.
And I said, Mom, two husbands.
Right.
You know? And she said, no, you can't have two husbands. They're a match set, a husband and a wife. And, you know, and she may have been trying to like understand like what happened in the bedroom, but even if that's not the case, you know, there was just this binary way of thinking.
Right.
And so, you know, we're very, you know, forthcoming over time about using the word husband, sometimes spouses, just because that is a little bit less gender.
Right.
People like that. That's the way, something I write about a lot is how our language reflects our values and how language changes the culture. And so something as simple as, you know, this is my husband and doing an introduction, that says so much.
Right.
And how you respond says so much.
So much, right. And it's so funny about the language because the culture changes and then the meaning of the language changes along with it. So yeah, I love that.
Thank you so much for listening to part one of Kill Me Now with Stephen Petro. How great is he? Kill Me Now is produced by Laura Vogel, edited by Colin Schmeling. This podcast and my life would not be possible without the help of Brittany Jo Sowards. If you are listening to this and you've stayed until the end, you better have subscribed. You better have given me a great review. 5 stars only, 5 stars, 5 stars. And you better have purchased my book and you better have checked out my website, judygold.com, so you can see that this Friday, September 17th, I am performing at City Winery in New York City. Okay? And if you are in the Minneapolis area, I am performing at the Pay Gap Comedy Jam on September 26th at the Minnesota State Fairgrounds. Okay? Like I know where that is. I'm acting like I know where that is. Also, if you are Jewish, ding! My bell's in the other room. I want to wish you a happy, healthy new year and an easy fast for the Yom Kippur holiday, which will begin Wednesday at sundown. Also, if you're an anti-vaxxer, go fuck yourself and be well. Wear a mask. I've been traveling and I've been double masking. You know, let's take care of each other. Let's take care of each other. Now, if you need 24/7 Judy Gold, you can, you know, follow me on Twitter and Instagram at Judy Gold, JewDygold. I don't know what else to say. It's a new season coming. It's autumn. Almost. And, you know, that means new things. I just want everyone to be happy. As you know, I spread the love. But thank you, thank you, thank you so much for listening. I am going to lose weight over the next few months because
I really love eating. It's really hard. I love eating. But my doctor said I have to go on a Mediterranean diet, so I might move to Greece. I'm just rambling right now to see if anyone ever listens to the very end. This is all just for my pleasure. Anyway, thank you all again for listening. Part two of Stephen is fucking awesome, so I can't wait for you to hear it next week. And as we always say, so long.
Don't forget to tune in next week to Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me.
Oh, don't forget to turn for part two on Just Kill Me.
No, it's not. It's just
Kill Me.
No.
Judy Gold's Just Kill Me.
Just Kill Me Now.
Just Kill Me Now.